Compulsively checking your smartphone for text messages, frantically trying to beat a level in a video game, arranging the tea towels with expert precision. We all know someone who exhibits behaviors like these, if we are not actually doing them ourselves. In the new book, Can't Just Stop, An Investigation of Compulsions, science writer and best-selling author Sharon Begley offers an in-depth examination of compulsive behaviors, great and small. Using fascinating case studies, interviews with psychiatric professionals and neuroscientists, as well as provocative scientific research, she shows that while compulsive behaviors may exist on a spectrum, people are driven to compulsion by one universal force, and that is anxiety. Sharon Begley is the senior science writer at STAT, the life sciences publication of the Boston Globe. The new book is Can't Just Stop, An Investigation of Compulsions, and we welcome Sharon Begley back to the roundtable this morning. Sharon, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks to be with you, Jeff.
What got you thinking and interested in writing about compulsions?
Really, it was just observing the behavior of people around me at work, in real life, and even my own. So, you know, as we've all seen, especially with electronic toys. So many of these things are really, really difficult, if not impossible, to resist. And I just began to notice one thing in particular, not only the irresistibility of them, but how people felt about using them. So, you know, when you think about, let's say, a behavioral addiction, gambling is an obvious one. People really, really love it. You know, they love to gamble, and obviously that gets them into trouble. But when I was noticing my friends, my colleagues, myself, and how we interacted with, you know, texting and social media and email and phones and everything else, it wasn't that enjoyable. It was like, uh-oh, if I miss something, I'm in real trouble. I feel anxious if I don't have this thing in my hand all the time. And that got me thinking, well, what is it about these behaviors and what underlies them? And it turns out to be not that we love it, not that it's pleasurable, not that it's fun, but it's anxiety. And I just thought that said something kind of sad about, you know, the way we live these days.
I do want to talk about that anxiety, but let us begin with your definition and what our working definition of compulsion should be.
Right. So this took me a long time because even the experts are not very clear about it, in particular what distinguishes a behavioral compulsion from a behavioral addiction. But let me just cut to the chase. A compulsion is a behavior that we do over and over. It doesn't have to be extreme, as in taking up, you know, huge amounts of time, but we just have to keep doing it. And the reason we do it is, as I alluded to a minute ago, anxiety. And by that, the experts mean that if we do not do it, then we are filled with this overwhelming, you know, even palpable anxiety, palpable in that it feels to many people like, you know, their chest is filling up with almost a hot liquid, like their head is buzzing. If we don't do this behavior, then this anxiety becomes overwhelming, and therefore the compulsion is a way to drain away that anxiety.
I'm going to ask a chicken and the egg question, which is, many of us I've dealt with panic and anxiety disorders for much of my life. So when you look at this, does it exacerbate it or does it cause it? In the sense of, in many of us, is it something that takes us down a rabbit hole, or is it something that introduces us to this or irritates it in many ways?
So it can be any of the above, unfortunately.
Okay.
So let me, you know, talk about the granddaddy of all compulsive behaviors, which those in OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. So there, the brain science has shown that the circuit that is involved in worrying, in telling us that something is off, that something has gone awry, that circuit is overactive in people with OCD. It gives them a constant chronic sense, uh-oh, something is wrong, and that something could be, my hands are covered with germs, or I left the front door unlocked, or the stove on. And the only way they can alleviate the anxiety from thinking that something is wrong is to execute the compulsion. So they wash their hands 100 times a day, or they keep going back to check the front door, etc. So in that case, the anxiety absolutely comes first, and the compulsive behavior drains it away. But, and here's the key thing, and I think it speaks to your question, Joe, the brain learns that by giving into the compulsive behavior, that's the way, again, to alleviate the anxiety. And because the brain thinks, and I know I'm being sort of anthropomorphic here, but because the brain thinks that this compulsive behavior was somehow helpful and good, and maybe even an indication that the original anxiety, the original thought was correct, that serves as a reinforcement to keep thinking the thought and to keep doing the compulsion. So it does become a very, very vicious feedback loop, which is why it's so hard to treat, let alone cure OCD, and also why so many of these other compulsions that fall well short of, you know, actual mental disorder, why they too are so hard for us to wean ourselves away from.
As you say, it's very hard to treat, but it's also hard to diagnose, right? I mean, it is frequently misdiagnosed.
Oh my gosh. So I have no idea. I spoke to so many people with OCD who had to see 3, 4, 5 therapists before they got an accurate diagnosis. And some of these people were living in New York City, where there are arguably more psychiatrists than hot dog carts. And even there, they had just such trouble getting the correct diagnosis, which obviously is crucial if you want, you know, even a hope for effective treatment. And, you know, I kept asking, how can that be? Again, the sort of iconic behaviors, the hand-washing, the checking, et cetera. What else could that be? And, you know, the International OCD Foundation, which keeps track of all this, has found that the average number of therapists people see before getting an accurate diagnosis is between 2 and 3. And their answer was, you know, sometimes the therapist just goes with, oh, generalized anxiety disorder or some kind of phobia or whatever. So, you know, the short answer is, despite how much attention OCD has gotten, including in, you know, pop culture and the media, it still falls short in terms of how well the healthcare community can identify it, let alone, you know, help people who have it.
And just this whole clarification of whether it is a disease, a disorder, I don't know, how do you come down on that, of the importance of what we call it?
Right. So I defer to the American Psychiatric Association, which has said that for something to qualify as a mental disease, a mental disorder, it has to cause distress or impairment. So distress is pretty obvious. Impairment means that it hobbles you as you try to go through your life holding a job or having a meaningful relationship or getting through school, any of those things. And so one of the themes of the book is that there are many, many compulsive behaviors that fall well short of that. Now, OCD, again, obviously is a recognized mental disorder, and the distress and impairment that it causes are obvious. But for a lot of the other compulsive behaviors that I talk to people about, they're doing the opposite. They are relieving distress. They are keeping people from being impaired. So there, it's, you know, it's really a tough call. But again, according to the strict APA definition, these are not mental disorders. They are a way of coping with an anxiety-producing world.
So let's get back to some of the ideas that you talked about very early in our conversation. When it comes to our compulsions and our anxiety and what is happening to us, is society, is our culture, is the technology that we are glued to really adding to the problem? Are we seeing more cases? Is it exploiting the problems that already existed?
Right. So as I was doing the research and reporting for this book, you know, I felt like I was slogging through molasses at some points, just, again, because the experts had not really figured out all of these things. And it became at least a little more clear, and it even crystallized for me when I just stumbled across this quote from a medical historian. His name is Roy Porter, and he said, "Every age gets the lunatics it deserves." So putting aside the problematic word lunatic, his argument was that there is something about any particular era that is more likely to bring out one mental disorder than another. And, you know, as has been pointed out many times, ours is an age of anxiety, whether that has to do with existential threats. And the Age of Anxiety poem by Auden came out just after World War II. Or even something like, again, the anxiety that our electronic devices cause in us. I think there's no question that that is a correct characterization of how we live. And I'll give you just two examples. For as long as experts have been surveying college students about their health, including their mental health, the most prevalent disorder had been depression. That's been written about endlessly. It, of course, causes tragedies such as, you know, student suicide. But for the first time in the most recent survey, the most common mental affliction was identified by the students themselves as anxiety. Anxiety more than depression is something that they sought help with. Anxiety more than depression caused them to have problems with their academic work. And similarly, the National Institute on Mental Health, which keeps these data for all Americans, again found for the first time that more people suffer from anxiety than from depression. So clearly, you know, there's something in the world we live in now that is causing many of us, especially more vulnerable people, to suffer from anxiety. Sometimes it doesn't rise to the level of a diagnosable mental disorder, because obviously one can be anxious without being mentally ill. But it's just so much more prevalent than it ever was.
So one of the things I kept on thinking about as I was reading the book is that, again, as someone who suffers from panic and anxiety, if you're in a full out panic attack, the outside response is often from people who have never had one is, well, just calm down, just stop doing that, and as if you have some control over it. So bring us back to the person who's always checking their phone and looking at it over and over and over again. Is because we hear that too. Well, just stop looking at your phone and pay attention to the conversation at the dinner table. Stop looking at your phone and pay attention to the meeting that you're in now. Is that easier said than done for that person?
I'm so glad you asked that, because that's why I chose the title that I did, Can't Just Stop, because in talking to people who are in the grip of these anxieties and are dealing with them as best they can by one or another compulsion, I asked them, what is the one message that you would like readers to get? And they said, please make clear that all these people who are telling me, just stop looking at your phone, just stop your compulsive exercising, just stop compulsive shopping, all the other things that I cover in the book, that is heartless. It shows a complete lack of understanding of what they are going through, what they are suffering, exactly as in panic attacks. I mean, you know, whether it's like telling someone who suffers from panic attacks don't, or someone who's suffering from depression, just pull yourself out of it. Again, it just betrays a complete lack of understanding for what the person is going through. And so, you know, in your examples, there's a reason why people have their face buried in their little screen at a meeting or at a party or at the dinner table. Now, there are, you know, ways that are being shown a little bit, the research is not great, but a little bit, to wean yourself off of that behavior. But there's a reason, and that reason is anxiety. And you can't just order someone to just stop and to, you know, wish away their anxiety.
It's a fascinating topic, as is the book, Can't Just Stop, An Investigation of Compulsions. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. Sharon Begley, very nice to have you back in the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Jim.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Sharon Begley is the senior science writer at STAT, the life sciences publication of the Boston Globe, and the new book is Can't Just Stop, An Investigation of Compulsions. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.